So good afternoon, everybody. This is Tim Brennan, treasurer of the UUA. And just so you know, I have muted all the lines so we don't have the ambient noise during our presentations. When we get done with the presentations, we'll open up for questions, and you can you will be able to open your own line by pressing star six. So we have with us today Kathleen Gaffney, who is the chair of the UUA Investment Committee, and also the co-chairs of the Socially Responsible Investment Committee, Kathy Mulvey and David Stewart. So thanks to all of you for joining us. Today we're going to be doing a performance review. We're going to look at the UUA Common Endowment Fund and how it's doing against its benchmarks. We're also going to talk about the November 9th Investment Committee meeting and outcomes from that. And then we'll have time for your questions and answers. And actually, before that, we will hear from David and Kathy about the outcomes of the Socially Responsible Investment Committee meeting. So with that, I would like to turn it over to Kathleen Gaffney, who is the chair of the Investment Committee. Thanks, Kathleen.
Great. Thanks, Tim, and thanks, everyone, for joining us this afternoon. I'm going to jump right in to the performance review, which is on slide three.
Yes, before you start, Kathleen, So anybody who pre-registered for the call would have had the presentation booklet sent to them. But if you are just calling in and you did not, you can go to ucef.org, and over on the right side is a link to the presentation books at ucef.org, and go over to the right, and there should be a link. So sorry to interrupt, Kathleen. Go ahead.
No, not at all. Thanks for providing that information, Tim. And I will try and be clear and descriptive so that you can follow along. I'm going to start with the performance of the endowment, the most recent performance, and over the long term on slide three. In the near term, we had a very good quarter. We've had a good 2017, and the last 12 months have been very good as well. If you look at the lower half of that slide, you'll see the data. And for the quarter, the endowment was up 4.1%, which ranked 13th among our peers being other endowment funds in the range of 50 to 250 million. So good for performance there. Year to date, we ranked number one, 14.6, versus the median at 11.6. So very strong returns there. And for the last 12 months, we ranked in the 16th percentile with a return of 14%. I would also highlight at the very far right that the long-term numbers, our annual returns over the last 10 years, are in the top quartile, the 22nd percentile. And we posted a return of 5.6% versus a median of 5.5%. Time periods of 3, 5, and 7 years have not been as positive, but I will talk a bit about that when we turn the page. Much of this is due to the investing environment over close to the last decade, but with financial repression, quantitative easing, and the central bank supporting the markets, they've been very much one-directional, and we've seen a tremendous amount of growth in passive management. We have a good balance of looking for strong performance from active managers, as well as getting index-like returns and ESG from some low-cost strategies. And so for the long term, that's served us well, and more recently, you can see that active management and the selection of the managers is driving the most recent returns. Turning to slide 4, we have performance on an annual basis, year by year, and I think that is helpful to look at because it shows, if you look again at the data on the bottom half, when you compare the composite, which is the endowment fund, to the allocation and policy index, which is how the committee has positioned the endowment in terms of the policy across asset classes and equity and fixed income, and whether we are over or under that policy within an allocation range, that discipline has been a positive driver of returns, but the manager selection near term, looking at 2016, 15, and 14, did hold us back. We're starting, as we saw on the last page, to see the benefits of that as some of our managers that are very active have come back in a big way. I would also highlight that if you go back to one of the more volatile periods in the market, 2008 and 2009, we really benefited from our active management as well as the discipline to stick with our policy and allocation. If you look at the performance in 2008 and 2009 relative to the median, we held up very well, and it shows the value of knowing who your managers are and being disciplined in terms of rebalancing and sticking to your allocation plan. I'm going to move on to slide 5, which is the total fund performance. This is net of fees, but it will give you good insight into what was driving the near-term returns. For the quarter, as I mentioned earlier, the fund was up 4.1% for the quarter, and that was driven by very strong equity performance coming from our domestic managers. In particular, Rumline, which is an index strategy but also focused on ESG, delivered superior returns at 3.8 versus the Russell 1000 at 3.1, and year to date 8.9 versus 7.9. So a very efficient and strong strategy there. Sands is one of our growth equity managers that has a solid long-term track record that had lagged last year but has come back in a big way over the last 12 months. Very strong returns there. Year to date, they have been up close to 32% versus the Russell 1000 growth at up 20.7. We also have a fair amount of exposure to international equities, as we see this as a good source of returns and a policy of 25% towards international. While year to date, those numbers have been good, up 24% versus the benchmark of just over 21%. For the quarter, the international exposure did hold us back a little bit, primarily from one of our managers here in Boston, MFS, although good inline returns from Boston Common and Baxter Street. Our exposure to emerging market equities is a relatively new mandate over the last 12 months, and that has been lagging. But as we would expect, this is a strategy that is really meant to lag in strong markets and hold up well in down markets. And emerging market equities has been a very good place to be in the current market environment. So overall, the equity numbers were quite good. And moving to slide six, you can see the detail of our fixed income exposure. Fixed income has actually been a strong driver of the excess return, not always what you expect from your fixed income. But the committee, as you probably know from listening to previous calls, we've spent a fair amount of time reshaping the fixed income to prepare for a different environment as the central banks begin to unwind their balance sheet. And we now have less exposure to traditional core fixed income as represented by the broad benchmark, the Bloomberg. For the quarter, our fixed income portfolio returned 1.8% versus 0.8% for the broad market. Year-to-date, up 5.2 versus 3.1. And over the last 12 months, where we have seen interest rates start to move up, we've been able to post returns of 4.6 versus an essentially flat market. Much of that is a result of using strategies that take advantage of multiple sectors of the fixed income market, so investments in corporate bonds and also non-U.S. bonds, and this has been a good source of returns for us, and we think we're well-positioned for the new environment. Our opportunistic investments, so where we have some additional flexibility with our managers, have produced good returns, but have been somewhat disappointing in terms of their returns relative to the benchmark, and that specifically is the GMO strategy. We will be visiting with them at our next quarterly meeting to determine what we want to do going forward. However, our opportunistic investment in Sevian Capital, which is a hedge fund strategy focused primarily on European equity, has done extremely well and is exactly what we would expect from this type of opportunistic investment. And do note that our exposure to opportunistic investments, the policy is set at 20%, and we currently have a total weighting of 14.5%. And then finally, private equity on slide, I think we're up to 7. This is where we have been slowly growing our exposure here as we've been evaluating different ways to get exposure to the private markets, which many endowment funds do. Particularly, there's been a lot of focus over the last couple of years as a way to drive returns as the public equity markets have become stretched. We do think of it as a good diversifier within the portfolio, but it also is a great way for us to have allocate money for positive impact investing. And some of that you will begin to see going forward as we have made a new allocation and are making a commitment to look at more and more of these opportunities that do reflect our focus on our UU values and what we can do to have a positive impact in the world and also generate a return. So very pleased with long-term and near-term performance, and I think the committee is quite pleased with our work in monitoring our managers, but also our work towards integrating the two committees. So just to give you a sense of what we tackled at the last committee meeting, you look at slide 9. I'm skipping 8 since we have talked quite a bit about the performance. But I would like to share with everyone how satisfying it has been for both committees to be meeting together. We make sure that we have time where both committees are tackling a good portion of the agenda. We've been doing this I think this might be our second or third meeting, and it's really been a great opportunity to recognize the expertise that the individual members bring to the process. And I got a very clear sense by the end of the last meeting that we've made significant progress in how we look to each other for making good investment decisions and decisions that also reflect our UU principles. Being a professional on the investment side, I can be honest that I approached that with a little bit of skepticism that we would be able to do that, but in combining our agendas and making sure that the topics that we cover jointly, and you'll note on page 9 that the topics that we focused on this last meeting were in regard to how we incorporate our UU values in a way that can be applied to our policy and guidelines, and we have made significant progress in working on that and defining exactly the issues that we want our policy and guidelines to cover. And then in addition to that, we also spent some time talking about the specific procedures and responsibilities of the different committees, so that the Socially Responsible Committee, and I'm going to let Kathy and David talk more about that. We are really relying on them to inform us about what we need to be thinking about from an ESG perspective. And then from a procedural standpoint, we really want to focus on how we're communicating across committees so that it's very clear and direct. And I think we've also seen interest across both committees in terms of making the right decisions and making sure that we are applying our investment expertise and knowledge in a way that serves the entire group well. So from my perspective, we've made significant progress. We're working well together. And I think we're developing best practices for investing with an ESG perspective. And then the other special topic that we looked at was the private equity allocation and what the returns have been across our investments, and making a commitment, as I mentioned, to focus at each quarterly meeting on bringing some opportunities to both committees to discuss that will allow us to bring our overall exposure in private equity up to target. We are cognizant of the fact that like public equities, the private equity markets have also seen a lot of interest, and we are committed to being disciplined in stepping in at the right time, but also looking for ways where we may be able to enter new markets that offer good opportunities. And a good example of that is one of our key actions within the quarter. If you turn to slide 10, we've highlighted two new investments. So we've made an allocation of $2 million to OCP Asia, which is a private debt fund focusing on companies in Asia that is broad in terms of their opportunities, but does have a focus on bringing a positive impact to the region. And then we hired a new small cap equity manager, Kennedy Capital, and they are coming in to replace Peer Capital, which had struggled with performance and had some management changes that we were monitoring and watching, and made the decision that we would be better served with a new small cap manager. So we had a very successful meeting, and I'm happy to report on that performance and the success that the committees have made at continuing to integrate. And I think at this point, if Kathy or David, if you have any comments, it might be helpful for the audience.
Sure. This is Kathy. I can jump in and just echo what Kathleen has said about the progress that we're making in integrating the work of the committees and really in looking at how to ensure that the translation of the values into our investment policy is you know consistent and really reflects the powerful impact that we have on social responsibility through the investments. So you know our work within the socially responsible investing committee at the most recent meeting, we've been looking at updates to our community investing policy, and there's steps underway there under the leadership of Kristen Faust, one of our committee members who's brings a lot of expertise in that arena. Just you know, there is it's an evolving landscape, and we want to make sure that that the policy is caught up with developments that are happening in that field. We also checked in on screening, and as Kathleen mentioned, the procedures really that we have in place within the SRI committee, working with the investments committee, and on the data that's provided by Sustainalytics, our research provider. And this is a really important time of year in shareholder advocacy as well, with many filing deadlines for the spring coming up. And so we heard from Tim Brennan about all the activity that we're engaged in on the priority areas of political spending, lobbying, and climate change, and about an exciting engagement initiative that is launching, called the Climate Action 100+, which Tim may be able to provide more details on. So, as Kathleen said, great progress with integration and continued leadership really in the SRI part of the work that we're doing. And David, I don't know if there's anything else you want to add.
Only just aspirational type things. I think part of our continued focus is to basically try to communicate out better via the blog. So I'd encourage folks that are out there to always check in with the UUCEF.org and look under the news section there. Often we will point out articles or provide news updates about the fund or talk about interesting happenings with regard to SRI, that sort of thing. And the other one is just that the I'm confident that as we go forward and fund the private equity portions of allocations in the portfolio, that we're going to get additional chances to do both impact investing and profitable investing. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing more of those types of managers come across our desk and pick from them wisely. That's about it for me.
Great. So this is Tim Brennan. So just picking up on what Kathy was saying about the Climate Action 100+, this is an initiative that is global. It was initiated by CalPERS, the California Pension Fund, which has been very active on the issue of climate change over the last, 8 or 10 years. And it includes partners from around the world. So what they did was they did their own carbon footprint, and they were stunned to find that the 100 largest companies in the world produce fully 85% of global emissions. And so the idea here is get a broad coalition of investors to focus on those 100 companies and encourage those that are taking action to lower their impact and also press those who are not doing enough. So this is just getting started. UUA is a signatory and member, and we will be involved in specific engagements with a number of companies. The other thing I wanted to mention is I was privileged to represent the UUA in a meeting called Faith in Finance. This was a meeting of about 100 representatives of religions from all over the globe that came together to talk about how they can align their investment of capital with the kinds of impacts they seek as faith-based organizations, and particularly promoting the UN Sustainable Development Goals. And those goals, I would encourage people to take a look at them, but they include things like addressing climate change, addressing gender inequality, and addressing poverty. So it was a very interesting meeting. Out of it will likely come a global organization to coordinate efforts in this area. And the UUA was one of about 8 organizations represented in the U.S. delegation to this group. But it included, Shinto, Hindu, Buddhist, Muslim, Anglicans, mainline Protestant, a lot of Catholic representatives. In fact, I was sort of hanging out with the CFO of the Vatican, and we agreed our work was similar. It's just that mine was a tiny decimal of his assets. But anyway, I think it was a really good meeting, and I look forward to what comes out of that. So with all of that, I'd like to open up the line to questions. So each of you can unmute your own phone. Just press *6, and I would request that after you're done with your question that you hit *6 again to mute your phone. That will help to avoid a bunch of ambient noise. So who wants to be brave and be first and ask a question?
Yeah, I'll be first. My name is Bob Denny. I would like to know what your best estimate is of the percentage of investing that is in socially responsible companies.
Are you talking about the UUA's portfolio?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. So currently a little bit over 80% of the portfolio is assigned to managers who explicitly incorporate environmental, social, and governance into their process. which is, I will tell you, as you know, a benchmark against other religions and other nonprofits, that is very high. But we're able to achieve good returns at the same time.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Dorothy Feely from Restoration Philadelphia. What does ESG stand for?
Kathleen, you want to?
Oh, sure. Environmental and social governance. And governance referring to corporate governance. It's, I think it describes more broadly the focus that we want to have, that many of us still think of as socially responsible, but specifically identifying factors where we want to be able to screen or have a positive impact with.
Yes, I agree with you that the terminology gets confusing. It seems like it changes every few years. The idea here is that the considerations that go into making investment decisions are not limited to financial measures like profit or earnings per share or other kinds of metrics like that. Rather, the investor looks at the broader impacts of what happens with their investments and the companies that are included in the portfolio. You know, are the companies having a positive impact on the environment, on social arrangements, and then how is their governance? Is it open and best practice, or is it flawed? So that's the idea.
Mm. And I think what I'm seeing on the investment side from a research perspective is that more and more, because of this focus on ESG, companies are starting to report quantitatively, measuring how much diversity is occurring within their firms or organizations, or how well they're being managed. So I think this is a real generational shift that is only going to continue, and as Tim mentioned, we're seeing that type of a focus does not deter from returns. It can actually really help.
Yeah, I would add to that. Actually, this is David. You can see specific cases where it did help in each of the categories. So, for instance, environmental, you saw BP blow up in 2010 when they spilled a bunch of oil in the Gulf. You see with social issues, you see boycotts or other problems within their organization with lack of diversity and kind of groupthink. And then with regard to governance, you know, you see that with regard to political, you know, getting tangled in political issues and or having things like the chairman and CEO holding the same person holding both seats, giving you kind of a lack of oversight and lack of wisdom when guiding these companies. And so in all those cases, it's arguable that taking those factors into account can indeed lead to a better stock performance at the end of the day.
Another question?
Yeah, this is Fred Morrison from the Unitarian Society of New Haven. I have a question about the relationship to active management and the business cycle that we all know exists within the process of the time that the business cycle is operating. And I read recently that active management tends to work well during the middle of the business cycle, but as you move toward the end, it doesn't. And I was curious what you think about that and what thoughts you have about the relationship of active managements to the business cycle itself.
This is Kathleen. My take on it is it's less about the business cycle and more about correlations in the market and economic policy. So from my observation, and this is just my opinion, the heavy amount of stimulus that has supported the global economy since the global financial crisis has really encouraged all investors to take more risk than I think they necessarily need to, and it's pushed valuations to very high levels. We're starting to see correlations drop, and active managers generally tend to outperform when markets have a very low correlation, when you really do have to identify the companies or countries and areas that perform well, as opposed to having stimulus drive earnings and profits. But that is just my opinion.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, what we've observed just in our portfolio, and I'm not an expert in the whole field, but as, you know, like since the meltdown and then the stock market recovery, when everything is rising, you know, when that S&P 500 is on that run, the markets are not making very fine distinctions among the good performers and the bad performers in the companies, and so the active managers have more difficulty. And it's actually when there's more volatility, and this is what Kathleen was getting at, in the market, that's when the active manager can really add the value, because they're picking among companies and trying to pick the winners and avoid the losers. So, and of course, there really is no such thing as just active management as a lump, because every manager is different. That's the nature of active management. But certainly our active managers have done well as more volatility has been introduced into the market and as the as the stimulus is getting to be dialed down. So I think that's where we are.
Hello, this is Jim Eagle from UUC Santa Fe. And I was just wondering if you could give me an example of some of the funds or equities or individual stocks or whatever that are in the 20% that are not socially responsible investments. That's the first question. The second question is, suppose somebody in my congregation asked me, are we invested in something like, publicly funded prisons? How can I answer a question like that, because it's not referring to an index fund of any kind?
Yeah. Well, I think there's sort of two answers. So the portfolio consists of some strategies where we own the individual stocks, and we have a manager who does the picking for us and the buying and selling, but we actually own the underlying securities. Not the same for bonds. We have a strategy where we actually own the bonds. So in those cases, we can be kind of fine-tuned and actually give direction to the managers. Do not invest in this particular group of companies. And certainly in that case, so that's most of the U.S. equity portfolio. In those cases, we screen out the prison companies. They're not included. We screen out, all the coal companies. We screen out, on and on. So that's that part of the portfolio pretty directly reflects UU values. And then when we go out and look for managers, we're seeking managers who, as we say, incorporate environmental, social, and governance considerations into their process. And that will, almost always result in a portfolio that would not include something like private prison companies, because they're, they have lots of problems. They have governance problems. They have, negative social impact problems. They have controversies. So those would most likely not be included in a portfolio. So when you you ask about these non-ESG strategies, I'm just kind of looking through the list and trying to remember, because I don't have it all noted here. But like a few of the these global bond funds don't explicitly incorporate ESG, Or some of these, perhaps the opportunistic investments. We still have a small position in a fund of hedge funds, although we're winding that down. So that's where you might find some of these firms that don't explicitly incorporate ESG. But that said, in every decision the investment committee makes, with the advice of the SRI committee, we bring UU values to bear, and we're talking with the managers when they're interviewed about issues that we're concerned about. We actually even ask them about their own governance. We ask them about their own, about the diversity of their firm, gender balance in the firm, which, by the way, they often don't have. But this is part of the conversation with every manager. So I think doesn't answer every bit of your question, but I'm quite confident that our portfolio, it does a good job of reflecting UU values. And you'd have to dig pretty deep to actually get into which fund might hold a bond that could be troublesome. I think for the most part, they wouldn't be.
Do you expect that 80% number to sort of, is that where you want to be? Is that where your policy is? Or do you expect it to go up or down or whatever?
I'd let Kathleen jump in, but, it's not, I mean, in an ideal world, of course, it would be 100%. But we're making, decisions about diversification, and in some asset classes, there just aren't SRI options. They don't really exist. Mm-hmm. I mean, for instance, they don't, for the most part, exist in hedge funds yet. But the market is coming to us. I think this is what Kathleen was getting at, is that the investment world is changing and more companies are moving in this direction. So I would expect over time that there would be more opportunities. I don't know, Kathleen, do you have a thought on that?
I completely agree. I'm seeing a tremendous shift. And while the cynic in me gets concerned about investment firms seeing this as a marketing opportunity, one of the items that we talked about with NEPC, our consultant at the last committee meeting, was that the folks that are making assessments of investment managers and their commitment to ESG strategies is developing ways to measure how committed they are and what the processes are in place that are driving their investment decisions, so you truly can get a good sense of what each firm and strategy is really about. So I think that we're going to have more opportunities to increase that potential, but I think we're also going to be armed with more information and data so that we can make good decisions to that end.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Hello, this is Trent Muller from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I just had a couple of clarifying questions. I was on the website looking at the investment screen tab, and the numbers are different than what you described. So it talks here, it says overall approximately 57% of the fund's investments are subject to some degree of SRI screening. So I was maybe it's just out of date, and that's fine. But my next question relates to another thing that's mentioned in the article. It talks about Sustainalytics, and I'm wondering if that's the same Sustainalytics that Morningstar is using to, grade funds based upon their, implementation of ESG investment strategies. And I'm wondering if you guys would have some kind of aggregate information, based upon, how SRI or ESG your fund is.
Yeah, so the answer is yes, it's the same firm. We use Sustainalytics really for our separately managed accounts. That, again, those are the accounts where we actually own the stocks, and they're doing the ratings of the companies to determine which companies can be included in the portfolio and which need to be excluded, and also how the portfolio is weighted. So it's weighted towards the higher scoring companies and avoiding the lower scoring companies. So yes, that's the same firm. So we have, as far as our that chart you referred to, I'm afraid it is out of date, and Susan and I will take a look at it later on this afternoon, and we will get it updated. Thanks for pointing that out to me. So, but that points out that we actually have made a lot of progress over the last couple of years. And as far as sort of an overall template, we do ask NEPCR investment consultant each year to do a kind of a look through at all the managers using an ESG lens and evaluating each one on that criteria. It doesn't break down to an exact score or anything, but we are looking at what each manager is doing and evaluating whether or not they're fulfilling what we're expecting of them on that front.
Thank you.
Do I have a chance here? This is Joan.
You do.
Okay.
Ah, Joan. Hey, Joan. How are you?
I'm fine. As a former member of the Socially Responsible Investing Committee, I've always been interested in the community investing. I was glad that David mentioned a blog in the news section, so I just went to the website. I clicked on news. I was irritated that I was suddenly being asked to do one of those surveys and I would get a free product.
I don't think you were looking at our site. We don't do that.
Well, it was UUCEF.org and then I clicked on news. Anyway, David, if you could let me know how to access information on both the community investing process, relook as it comes along. I don't expect it right away. And I was also curious about, for all of you, the proxy voting this season. How are you still using a service to do that for you? I keep personally
sure.
getting proxies and often wonder what to do with it, with them.
Yeah, so the UUA definitely votes our proxies on all of our shares that we hold directly. And then with regard to community investing, I'm struggling at the moment to find the exact report, but I know there's a detailed listing on the website. I'm reasonably sure it's under Social Responsible Investing tab on the right-hand side at the
top.
Hi,
Dave.
And that it will list all of the investments that we have in the community, the more or less 1% community investing piece. Does that answer your question?
I'm looking for it, and I hope so. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's actually
this is Kathy, just to say on the I think it's the homepage of UUCEF, right down on the right hand side, there's a blue box that says how did we vote on proxies. So you can actually then go company by company and find out.
Hi, this is Susan.
Yeah, Joan, I would say try the website again, because when I go there, there is no button to click for news, and certainly there's no survey that pops up. So you may have been misdirected somehow by your browser to the wrong underlying website.
Yeah, I can answer your question now. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I was just going to say that in the Socially Responsible Investing at the Heart, down in the middle of the page, if you go down to Community Investment and click on that, then in that first paragraph you'll see a complete detailed list of our community investments, and that will give you a PDF of all of our current community investments.
Thanks, I'll look.
Okay. We have a couple more minutes. time for maybe one or two more questions. Anybody else want to ask a question? Okay, so I'm not hearing anything, so I'll give everybody back 8 minutes of their life. Thanks very much to Kathleen and Kathy and David for joining the call. These are volunteers who give a lot of time and effort to the UUA, and we really appreciate it. And thanks to everybody for joining the call. I think we had a good call, and certainly we had good news to talk about. If you have further questions that occur to you, please feel free to shoot me an email or give us a call. The information's on the website. If you can remember it, just all you need to do is send an email to treasurer@uua.org, and it'll come into my box. And I'm always happy to talk to investors in our Common Endowment Fund. So with that, thanks very much.
Thanks.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, all.